Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everybody. Well, today's Monday. It's October 3rd, 10 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard. A little bit of housekeeping to begin with. John Bailey, the publisher of the White Plains Citizen-Ed Reporter, won't be able to join us today. He's got some personal items to attend to today. So we hope to speak to him later on in the week and hope all's well for him and his wife and his family. And so we're going to have a different guest on today. We're going to be speaking to none other than Michael Edelman. He's the national as well as the international political analyst and pundit. And so we're going to bring him up a little bit higher to the beginning of the show. And then Robert Keston, the executive director of the People's Movement for Human Rights Learning, he's going to join us thereafter at from 10:30 to 11. And then it'll just be you and I that will pick up the last hour or so and move from there. So there's a lot going on, as they say, and we're going to need to find out what's happening on the world stage. So we're going to wait for Michael Edelman. Let me just check to see what we're doing here first. Okay, I'm going to wait for Michael to call, but let me see if I can find bear with me a moment because I'm a little confused here. Need to find out some numbers. See how this works. Okay. Well, this should be okay. We'll see. By the time I figure out what the right thing to do is, our next caller will probably call in. So we'll have to see how that all works out. Bear with me a moment while I fumble through this process, and let me just see if I could find it here. Bear with me. Where are we? Okay. Yep, that's what I figured was a problem. 1 second. Yeah, Michael is having problems calling out. So we're going to see if we can call him. probably has a lot to do with the calamity that took place in Florida. So bear with me a moment as we try to call him up, and we'll see how we do. 1 second. That didn't go through. I made a mistake there. Bear with me. Okay, let's see if this works. We're going to try to see if we can get a hold of Michael.
I'm busy right now, but your message is very important to me.
Okay, so we're going to try to get him on another line. Oh, I think he may be calling. I'm not sure. Good morning.
Hey, how you doing?
How are you? I was trying to reach you, but I dialed the wrong number, so you got to me before I was able to get back to you. So I'm glad your phone is working, but is your phone being not functioning because of the storm? This is part of the aftermath.
No, we're nowhere near the storm. I just didn't make a call. It didn't call. I tried another line and it rang. It just wouldn't call you. I'm not sure why.
Okay. Who knows why? You know, technology falls apart every few seconds.
That's right. Exactly.
So thank
right.
you for getting through to us. Well, what do you think is, I guess the biggest story, of course, in the United States is what happened in Florida. And Florida has literally been decimated. It is absolutely amazing. How does the government respond in a situation like that? Because this is huge.
Well, we have FEMA, federal response, and then you have the local and state response. But in this particular case, there's a lesson to be learned about building on the water.
Yes.
Don't do it.
Don't do
it. Okay, everybody wants to live on the water, but those structures, there's no way those structures could hold off a hurricane with 150-mile-an-hour winds. Now, the structures they're building on this side of Florida, on the water, are structurally different. Those were old buildings. They were made of wood mostly, or plywood or whatever they're made
right.
of. So they, you know, they blew away. The buildings on this side have the hurricane impact less. They have different code specifications. They just finished two or three large on the ocean developments in Palm Beach, Riviera Beach. And I don't know, we haven't been hurricane tested yet, but I'm sure they hold up.
Wow. Well, there's a lot to say. Only about a week before, there was a major storm in Canada, and it literally destroyed a lot of the waterfront properties. It was amazing.
Yeah.
I've never seen houses ripped to shreds. It's like as if they were being built, but they were being destroyed.
They weren't. These houses were not built to withstand hurricanes.
Correct. Yeah.
So
unbelievable.
If you're going to build on the water, you've got to build something that'll stand against the kinds of storms, by the way, that climate change is engendering, which are very strong, much stronger than in the old days.
Ever before.
Much stronger storms
Absolutely.
That we've seen. These storms are big time storms. This was almost a Category 5 hurricane, and there are two more in the Atlantic coming right afterwards.
Oh my! Oh my! Oh God! And the Caribbean was destroyed. So many places been hit so badly. Cuba was it was amazing what happened, and in Puerto Rico and the Dominican Republic.
Yeah.
I don't know how people find the strength to rebuild, and the costs are going to be through the roof. Unbelievable.
Well, you know, hurricane insurance now in Florida is virtually unaffordable. Unless you have hurricane-proof homes. The premiums on these are enormous, and these companies aren't able to stay in business because the claims are so enormous.
Do you think that there will be a governmental change, certainly in Florida, or maybe on the national stage, where housing regulations will have to be upgraded in order to be able to meet the challenges of the changing weather patterns around the world?
Pretty much.
Here in the United States.
Yep.
So we're going to go through that transition now. I see. Okay. Unbelievable. Well, I hear that there are places in Florida where people are kayaking, whereas before there were streets, you know, to traverse. And that's not happening anymore at the moment. One thing that is
different. Well, the water was up to... Go ahead. So the water was up to people's chests.
Wow. Unbelievable.
You know, so, yeah, and the people that stayed around said they totally misjudged.
That is amazing that people thought that they could ride out the storm, even though there was such warning. But that happens at every time there is a storm. What is it about, you know, us as human beings that, I don't know, do we just want to dismiss what the government is saying? Is it anti-governmental thing, or is it just that
it's too expensive and too difficult? It's anti-science too. Plenty of people didn't get their booster shots. They didn't get any shots because they don't believe anything they're told by anybody other than Fox News.
Well, that's not going to do too well for Fox News at the end of the day. Unbelievable.
Well, the people, just as an aside, the people at Fox News were required to get a vaccination and boosters before they walked in the building.
I didn't realize that. Uh-huh.
Yeah,
I
Fox
didn't realize
News was,
that.
This is only, this is spewing nonsense.
Yeah. Amazing. Amazing what's going on. Yeah, we've come to a new point in our, I guess, our evolution as a nation and as a people and our politics, too. It is literally an upheaval. I wonder when it will settle, and I don't know if it will ever. So it's fascinating. Well, I wanted to ask you about something else on the international stage. It seems that Russia is smuggling Ukrainian grain to help pay for Putin's war, and he seems to be really losing. In the last hour or so, I hear that Ukraine has clawed back more territory in the southern Kherson region, which is mind-boggling. It's a major, major blow to Putin. Is he going to be able to maintain his sanity, or is he going to go nuts, throwing who knows what sort of bomb? Nuclear bomb.
Well, that's it. Does he revert to tactical nuclear weapons because he's in a corner? Or does he leave gracefully? I don't know the answer to that question.
I guess nobody really does except him, and he may not know if and when he becomes unhinged as well. Some other stuff is going a little bit further south in Florida, of course. Bolsonaro and Lula in Brazil, they had a major runoff. Bolsonaro surprisingly came out strong. Nobody got more than 50%, and that's a requirement in order for them to rise to the point of becoming the declared president. So they're going to have another election, I hear, in about a month or so. And what is it about Jair Bolsonaro? He seemed that, well, I guess his statistics before the election was that he was not going to win and that Lula was going to win. And now all of a sudden I'm hearing different things about Lula and different things about Bolsonaro. What's the story with either or both of them? Because I guess I got their politics wrong before. I thought Lula was going to be the progressive and Bolsonaro was the authoritarian. And I don't know if that's made an impression in Brazil.
Well, South American countries have always lurched toward non-democratic governments.
Particularly,
you know, they've been susceptible, whether it was Juan Perón or Maduro or, you know, any one of a number of other pretenders to the throne. But Jair Bolsonaro is, in fact, a right-wing autocrat.
Yeah.
Viktor Orban, like Erdogan,
they're
all in the same boat. And they all looked at Donald Trump, and they said, well, you know what? If the election doesn't come out the way we want it to come out, we're just going to say that it was fixed.
Well, that's what we heard, and Bolsonaro said that, which was amazing. Never thought that he would stoop to such a low platform, but evidently that's the way it seems to work. Got to ask you about England, because it seems that what they imposed as far as their policy going forward to help people, I guess, go through the process of paying off their debts and so on and so forth, they almost went through a meltdown at the Bank of England. And yet this is policy that's being put together by the politicians. Is that a problem nowadays? Isn't it supposed to be almost a scientific methodology of how you function on the banking system? And why did the Bank of England fail?
You've got mail.
Well, apparently the new prime minister reversed course after after claiming she was going to reduce tax rates on the wealthy. She decided not to do that.
Right.
So supply side economics is out of favor because it hasn't worked. We're tried.
Yeah.
So anybody who thinks that, that the lowering tax rates on wealthy people is going to stimulate the economy is kidding themselves.
Mm-hmm.
We tried it three times. It didn't work any of those times. So, I mean, you know, she just got to 10 Downing Street. I would imagine I would imagine that she wants to stay there. And so she's listening to the consensus, which says don't lower taxes.
Wow. Amazing. Well, let's talk about something a little bit closer to home. It's the flu vaccine time. Seniors need to rev up their
yep.
prospect and get their shots. And yet Americans are very weary of getting inoculations. What's causing us to be, again, is this part of the whole thing that we don't believe in science, we don't believe in technology? When does that come about? Because at one time, technology was our savior.
Yeah, that's right. We always have believed in vaccines.
Yeah.
Our parents have believed in vaccines. In 1955, I was a polio pioneer. I got the first Salk trial of the Salk polio, which obviously went very well. We've basically wiped that out. People watch fake news sources, and they believe what they're told without doing any checking of their own because they're lazy. Lazy or stupid.
Yeah.
So if you don't get a flu shot, you can bet you're going to get the flu. And if you're a senior and you don't get the flu shot, there's a good chance you could die from it because it's a respiratory disease. And so seniors are more susceptible to respiratory diseases, as are young people.
Absolutely.
I got my flu shot last week, and I got the booster on the COVID over the
on
weekend.
On COVID.
Yeah, I got both shots.
You know,
I felt a little droopy. I felt a little droopy for a couple of days. But that's it. That was the reaction. Well, people don't want to believe the science. They have to take responsibility for the havoc that results.
It's absolutely amazing because people are still dying for because they're not getting inoculated. I got my flu shot as well. I think it was a week or two ago, and I was very pleased. And it was very easy. I didn't get a bad reaction, thankfully. And then I think there's another booster shot now could get for COVID, so I'm going to get that as well. I don't know why people look at it askance, as if it's going to hurt them. There was so much, anti-science. Is that caused by an equivocation of what we hear from the CDC, or
no?
Or is that coming? Where is that coming from?
Fox News.
It is Fox News.
It's not coming from any responsible news outlet. It's coming from Murdoch's papers and Murdoch's outlets. And it's not even coming from the news portion. It's coming from the opinion portion. People don't understand the difference. They don't reference the edition. If they hear some opinion from a Jeanine Pirro or a Laura Ingraham about how bad the shots are, if they hear that, they're likely to take them at face value rather than Google it, which takes a little bit of time. There's millions
Absolutely.
Of people, tens of millions, that have been vaccinated with no problem. So for people to say that there's a problem is ludicrous. There isn't.
Yeah, wow. Oh, God. Well, it seems that getting back to Russia, Vladimir Putin's military draft changed everything, and thousands of Russians have fled the country.
Yeah, amazing, right?
It really is amazing. And Putin's been putting up people who are not trained. as you know, as in the army, and he's putting them up there, and they're leaving. They're leaving the country.
Yeah.
They're going outside of Russia. I never heard of that before in my life. I don't think anyone ever like. Go ahead.
These people have their own way of getting real information, notwithstanding the fact that the government wants to deprive them of it. They know what's going on in Ukraine. They know Russia is losing.
Yes.
And so they want no part of it. Can you blame them?
No, I can't blame them at all. Unbelievable. Well,
exactly.
Well, I guess it'll be what it is. Also, you know that there are a lot of pipelines that were dispersing energy sources for Poland, for other countries as well, for Sweden and other places, and yet there's talk that a lot of these pipes were sabotaged. Nobody knows yet from whom, but you know, there's speculation that it's the Russians that have done it, and
you can
I hear
the
Swedes.
The
I think we can,
even though
it seems
it's
speculative at the moment. Yeah.
Who else but the Russians would do it?
Exactly, because it didn't happen only to one of these pipelines, but it happened to three. So that
right.
seems like it was a plan more than anything
seems
else.
Seems like it. They're
does
trying to squeeze
like
Europe.
It.
They don't
yes,
like the
they
fact,
are.
Russia doesn't like the fact that Europe is all together on defending Ukraine. And so they're trying to make life miserable for the Europeans.
Yeah. Wow. Well, it seems that Germany, Denmark, and Norway are going to deliver 16 additional howitzers to Ukraine, and the Ukrainians, I guess because they're fighting for their country, that is the extra missing aspect of the way the Russian army is functioning. It's absolutely mind-boggling to me how Putin's and the Russian military has literally disintegrated before our eyes. Can Putin survive China knowing this, or anybody else knowing that?
He certainly has to be,
the Soviet Union will stay together.
He has to be stunned. He has to be stunned with what happened. His military obviously was a paper tiger. Ukraine is chasing them out of areas in Crimea and the Donbass. And there apparently is nothing that Vladimir Putin can do about it except to try and conscript people that have no military training at all.
Yeah, wow. Well, the best thing of all is
people.
I heard that the Pope... Go ahead.
No, he's
finish
willing to
your
send
thought.
His own kids to death. He's willing to send his own kids to death.
Unbelievable. Well, the Pope is also warned of a nuclear war risk, and he's appealing to Putin with respect to the Ukraine. I mean, this is frightening when the Pope has to make a opine about this. You know, that I guess he really must have lost his mind, Putin, because this is insanity. I would think so. I can't imagine anything else to drive a person to even think that they can use an atom bomb today, even though...
Well, he hasn't...
He hasn't used it yet. No, not yet. So, unbelievable.
He may.
Yeah, that's the problem, I guess. Does the war in Ukraine affect other parts of Asia as well? Or is this going to be contained basically within Russia in their struggle against Ukraine?
Say that again?
Can the war that is now basically a challenge between Russia and Ukraine, can it expand beyond? Can we expect other aspects of territory within the Soviet Union to move away from Putin? Is it conceivable that, you know,
well,
Russia could split apart?
They already have split apart. There's nothing left except Russia.
Exactly.
All the other countries are on their own. The question is, does Russia make a move against NATO countries and invoke, and do the NATO countries invoke Article 5, which is an attack against one is an attack against all?
Well,
that's the question.
I was, I read in, I think it was AP or something like that, or maybe Reuters, I'm not quite sure.
Yeah.
Bulgaria opened the natural gas link with Greece on Saturday. And so people are moving away from and looking for freedom from the Russian and the Russian energy. Will Putin have anything to sell at the end of the day?
He's got nothing to sell. The only
thing
he's
is
going to
destroy him. Sorry?
Russia is a gas station. That's all it is.
That's all it is.
They make nothing. They don't make anything.
Wow. I can't imagine that he can survive when Russians are fleeing the military call up. He's got nothing left. He must look like a fool to everybody in Russia. I just don't understand it.
Does
we don't have that much time.
Like, the question is, is anybody in a position to move against him?
Evidently not.
That's the question.
That's the question. You're right.
You know,
the other question is in Iran. What's happening with them since the woman was killed for not wearing the hijab as their special, I don't know, group is out there deciding who's wearing it right or wrong. And she was killed. And the young generation of Iranians are fighting back, and they've got...
Yep.
I don't know where they find the strength to do it, but they've had enough. Is it conceivable that Iran could fall apart as well? The Ayatollahs?
Well, the people of Iran are fairly educated, you know, by standard. And they understand what democracy and freedom means. And they also understand that they've been ruled by a right-wing theocracy. And who is enforcing their moral
on the rest of the country, just as we have in this country now a right-wing coalition, including six members of the Supreme Court, who want to enforce right conservative Catholic doctrine on the rest of us.
Yeah.
It's the same thing everywhere. The Taliban want to enforce conservative doctrine on the Afghani people. And so that's what's at play here all over the world is democracy versus autocracy and theocracy on top of it.
How did we arrive at this place when democracy was supposed to be a standard that was respected, communism and the authoritarianism of Russia was not. Why are we melding? It seems that we're melding it all together. And I don't know who's going to win right now.
We got to worry about the United States. When Donald Trump used the phrase America First, he used it in the fascist way, in the 1930s way. Which is, you know, let's leave everybody, we're up the ladder, we got our rung on the ladder, I got my million, and I'm not going to let anybody else have any possible chance of getting their million and blah, 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 right? But what he missed was that democracy is dying, and it's dying because people like Trump have risen and they have cult followers who are uneducated people by and large, who only want him... who want him to be strident and vulgar because they are. And that's why they follow this guy, okay? And when you have an autocrat like that, you've got to step on him quickly. Otherwise, as in Donald Trump's case, if you should read the new books that are out, Con Man by Maggie Haberman, which is a 700-page, line-by-line account of how very bad this guy was for America. And there are a number of, I have 14 books altogether that I've read so far that have in one way or another covered the Trump administration, have interviewed people that worked in the administration, have interviewed people that left the administration like Tillerson and McMaster and Kelly and all the rest. It's pretty clear what was going on. While Trump was saying drain the swamp, he was filling the swamp.
Yes, he was.
With his own swamp monsters who were far professionals who were serving in the government. These professionals were not political. They were serving because they wanted to serve the people of America and they wanted to do the right thing. Donald Trump has admitted wanting to replace these people with loyalists. So he didn't care about the right thing. He cared about the Trump thing.
Yeah. Amazing. It's amazing that he rose to such heights. It's a mind blower to me. And yet people knew him from his earlier days and from the days of his father.
Let's be careful. Let's be careful when we use the term knew him. People didn't know him. Some of the people that lived in and around New York City knew him.
Yeah.
And they knew him as a con man and a thief.
Yes, it did.
And a welcher and a fraud.
Yeah.
But the people that go to his rallies,
they don't
view him that way. They view him as Jesus Christ coming back.
Amazing.
But the good thing is a recent polling has shown that Donald Trump's favorable is in the crapper, and the people that want him to run for president is substantially below 40.
Thank goodness for that.
You know, he may want to run, but if he runs, he'll lose. If he's the nominee, he'll lose. And I suspect he won't be allowed to be the nominee, that he'll get a fight in the party.
Yeah.
And as I said before, Joe Biden won't run. At 82 years old.
Yeah, exactly. All right, we'll see who's going to rise up from wherever. It'll be good for America.
30 days to the midterms. 30 days
Absolutely.
To the midterms.
Amazing. Well, unfortunately, Michael Edelman, what a pleasure. That's not unfortunate. That is the pleasure. But it's unfortunate that we have to move on to our next guest. So thank you so much. All the best. Stay
You're
healthy.
Welcome.
Stay safe.
You too.
Be well. Bye.
Bye-bye.
There we have it, folks. None other than Michael Edelman. He's a lawyer, national and international political analyst and pundit. I don't know how he does it, too, but he does it. Well, let's bring in none other than Robert Keston, who is the executive director of the People's Movement for Human Rights Learning, which was founded back in 1988. Shulamit Koenig, or Koenig, I don't know how they pronounce it in English. I know the German. And she spoke of the movement's independent international nonprofit organizations working on human rights globally. Robert Keston certainly picked up the mantle. So good morning, Mr. Keston. Thank you for your patience, and I'm sorry for my delay getting to you. How are you?
I am well. Excuse me. I'm well, thank you. And yourself?
Thank God. I've got no complaints. So I'm doing better than I did last week, and it keeps getting better. So I have absolutely no complaints whatsoever. I wanted to ask you about where we are, especially when it comes from a religious point of view, because it's now the holidays, it's the high holidays in the Jewish religion. You've got Christianity going through its different machinations around the world as well. And you've got Islam that's in turmoil. But when we think of religion, we think of, like, for example, there's a Russian church that some believe in, and there's another church in Russia that other groups believe in. What's the purpose of that, and why do we have these splits? Is that really a religious thing, or is that just controlled by a particular sect, wherever they happen to be? We don't have to even mention who they are, but there are so many of them. Why is there a struggle between the same religious, background? So you have it in Christianity, you have it in Judaism, you have it in Islam. What's going on here?
The dichotomy in religion is not any different than the divisions that we see on the political and social front in every other aspects of our lives. There are those
exactly.
people that cling to the past, and there are those people who are pushing for a brighter future. And
mm-hmm.
it is unfortunate that those two goals don't always mesh. And we see
yeah.
that. And it's sometimes interesting who the bedfellows are. Sometimes they are unexpected, but generally they are predictable. But it's like if you look now, you find people on the official left who question our involvement in Ukraine. And you have
yeah.
people on the right, extreme right, who question our involvement in Ukraine. And then you have the great middle that seems to be supportive of our involvement in Ukraine. So often the left and the right extremists find that they agree, even though they disagree on how to get there. And then you have the great middle, which unfortunately also includes a lot of people to be engaged. And that
mm-hmm.
is always a great danger, because unless you have people that are willing to engage, unless you have people who are willing to be passionate, you can't win.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you're just you remain a bystander.
So when you had like that situation where a young woman who wore a headscarf, they call it a hijab, why did that create such turmoil? Is that the old standard? And does religion actually evolve, or is it just a methodology to people in one place where they're controlled and their religion doesn't evolve, or their understanding doesn't evolve? And 'cause it looks like in Iran, for example, the young people are just like they've had enough, and they're not standing down. They seem to have, it's a new generation, and they're fighting back with these ayatollahs. Can we expect that in every one of the religious sects around the world?
You have to remember that Islam is not merely a religion in Iran. It is also the law. It is also the government.
Yes, it is.
So be careful of calling it religious, because it is
uh-huh.
also social, it's the law, it's the culture. And what you're seeing is in human history, we continue to move forward. It is just the way that it is. And
mm-hmm.
when we reach a certain point of moving forward, there are groups that fear that their control of power, their control of the economy, their control over social norms is being challenged. And when their fear reaches a certain level pitch, they push back. And
mm-hmm.
as in with your last conversation, the Trumpsters are people, and Trump is not really one of them, who
mm-hmm.
fear that their hold on power is overtly and covertly threatened. And so they've
mm-hmm.
pushed, and they say things like Jews will not replace us, and whoever said that everybody should have the right to vote, and
mm-hmm.
let's take away trans rights and LGBTQ rights and women's rights and blacks' rights and Hispanics' rights.
Mm-hmm.
This is a white Christian country, and don't you ever forget it.
Mm-hmm.
They do that out of fear. They do that out of anger. They do that for all the reasons that they have started losing power and prestige, because the world moves forward. And if you look where the world was 100 years ago and where we are in the world today, you see that progress will not stop. It doesn't matter how hard you fight against it. And you might have, like Hitler did, like Stalin did, those moments of time. Sometimes they last for a generation, but they pass. Yes, there are always people who support those horrible positions, but time, we evolve. Because if we didn't, we wouldn't be able to maintain societies. We wouldn't be able to advance culture. We wouldn't be able to bring in and incorporate science into our lives. Those people would keep those things out, because all of those things are a threat to their power. And so since the threat to their power is illegitimate in terms of human survival, just like those who refuse to acknowledge climate change, if you continue to refuse to admit it, then you have signed on the dotted line for the extinction of human beings.
Yeah.
So that is what you're seeing in Iran right now. That is what you're seeing in much of the world right now, where young people are saying, you're killing us. Mm-hmm. Your policy, your way of doing business, your belief system is literally killing us. And in Iran, it was. It was death. Young people know that for them to have an opportunity in the 21st century, in the world at large, which grows smaller and smaller every day, that they have to progress. They cannot go back to a time when the world was dictated by a book. Mm-hmm. They can believe in that book. They can be proud of their religion, but their religion, like everything else, has to find its way into the modern world. And those religious leaders, those social leaders, those cultural leaders who find the way to progress and to move us all forward succeed. And those who try to hold us back and push us to a time that no longer exists will fail. They may not fail right away. And we see this in the United States, as your past guest stated, our democracy is fragile right now. Because democracy is hard, but the future of self-rule, the future of our kind of democracy, where people elect representatives, they don't elect leaders, they elect people to represent their views, that is the way of the future. We may have a setback. We may lose some of that temporarily, but at some point, that big middle, that big silent middle will rise up and say, you know what? You've gone too far, and your days are over. We hope that it won't be violent, but one never knows. I mean, I think that back in 1776, there were people that were hoping that it wouldn't be violent either. But the people who wanted to maintain the status quo definitely were willing to risk their lives, at least in the beginning, and it was same in the Civil War. I don't think that the leaders at that time really were hoping for violence, and if it was going to be violence, they hoped that it would be very short. That didn't end up being true. Progress since that time. Look at the progress since 1776. Look at the world's progress in so many places since then.
So do we have these mechanisms to try to control the public? Why do we have that? Is that the only way to control people, to keep them in a static place, as opposed to, adopting like the Universal Declaration of Human Rights? Why are people so in fear of that?
It's not too much freedom. There's really never too much freedom as long as there are rules in place to protect individuals. But people who want power are threatened by anything that challenges their power.
Mm-hmm.
And the Universal Declaration of Human Rights threatens the power of elites. It threatens the power of big business. It threatens the power of big government. And so therefore, big religion. And so therefore, it appears to be a threat, but it's only a threat to those who put power above everything else and put power and attaining and maintaining power above the rights of their fellow citizens.
Mm-hmm. So how did we get to the point where it's now controlling others rather than respecting them or trying to convince them intellectually or through kindness? When did we get so riled up that we want to hurt the other people, whoever they happen to be?
It's always
where been
that
way. Where does this anger come from?
It's truly always been that way. There are just periods of time when that is covers. But you know, cavemen were violent. In the 1200s, people were violent. In the 1940s, people were violent. So there's nothing new. You know, we have to remember that there is really nothing new. It is how we develop our civil society that determines how we live. And those who push back against a more civil society are those who are trying to maintain the status quo. And they're trying to maintain the status quo because in that status quo, they are the preferred people. So when you see a white supremacist, they're looking to maintain a period of time where whites could walk down the street and then walk on the sidewalk and everyone else had to get off. You know, when women were a possession, when children were a possession, that's what they would like to go back to. They would like to go back to a time, at least in the United States, when they had superiority just based on being white. And that's not dissimilar to what you see in certain European countries, where people of the aristocracy, with their voice alone, with the accent that they had because of their privilege, could make people shudder because of what they could do to you, and there was no recourse for you. So these things are historic. These things are part of our DNA. And as we evolve, as we modernize, as we push for stronger codes for a civil society, we have to break those things down and adhere to a new, stricter set of rules that allow us to live in community with other people, following the laws and rules that we put in place so that we can live in these complex societies. A feudal system is a very simple society in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
A fascist regime is a very simple society in many ways. Democracy is complicated and messy, and a lot of people therefore become very, very uncomfortable because they don't know where they stand and they don't know how to make that give them what they feel that they need or deserve. And that's the problem, or a big part of the problem.
Are we not teaching that? Is that
Say
the problem?
That again?
Are we not teaching that? Are we just simply ignorant of all
of these
things?
If you mostly teach biographies as history, then we do not teach that. If we learn who the rulers were, who the leaders were, who the kingpins were, we reinforce it. Our teaching process today remains as it has been historically in terms of what is history, what is society, what is culture. Those are the leading figures. Everybody else was riffraff.
You know, so yes, if you take women's studies, yes, if you take black studies, yes, if you take Jewish studies, and you learn about what it was like to be oppressed, LGBTQ studies, and you learn what it was like to be oppressed, you're getting a much better view of what the world really is and why civil society is so important. But if you just take a regular history class or the history that's predominantly offered in public education, then you learn about George Washington, you learn about King George, you learn about the Queen of Sheba, but you don't learn about all the people and what transpired and how they were treated and why that has resulted in this up and down world that we live on, where we never get off that hamster running around forever on that contraption that goes around and around and around and around. You know, it's not that history repeats itself. It's that history comes in waves. And everything is there under the water, and it's just a matter of time before it resurfaces. And how prepared are we to deal with it? We were not prepared to deal with the Trump revolution. We were not prepared to deal with 1930s, 1940s Germany. We were not prepared to deal with Jim Crow. We were not, you know, so we can see all the places where we were not prepared, but we have not learned the lessons how to be prepared. And so we end up, when those things reassert themselves, we panic because we thought that that would never happen again. While those who would like to return to those days have well prepared and are ready to take advantage when they have the opportunity to stick their head above the water level.
Also, I got to ask you about sexuality. If the good Lord decides, assuming that God is the be all and end all of what exists today from beginning to end, wherever that end may come, why do we have such hatred of or despise or are just offended somehow by people being gay? Isn't that God's will? There's gay behavior or homosexual behavior, some people say, in animals, and certainly there is in the top of the food chain, which is the human being. Why should that offend people, especially if they don't have the proclivity to be gay and they're straight? Why does that offend people? Where's the anger? Where does that come from? Or is it just to subjugate people?
Well, it's always to do that. But if you go back in time, the earliest religions, when religions started, when the culture that evolved around religion started, population was very small. And you needed people. And so you have things like in the Bible that says, be fruitful and multiply.
Fruitful. Yeah.
And that was to build up your numbers so that you were able to defend yourselves against your enemies. And homosexuality, lesbianism, and all of those things challenged your ability to be fruitful and multiply. So they became
a negative. I never thought of it that way. Wow.
It's just like now, when in the African American community, very often one of the reasons the community is so opposed to, or has been historically opposed to, accepting homosexuality was that it was viewed as a way of lowering their numbers. And that was a danger. Just like intermarriage has long been a negative in religious circles. You know, don't intermarry. Why? Because we need to build up our numbers. So all of those things are intrinsically related.
I never
numbers
realized
of people.
It was such a visceral fear. My God.
It's a tremendous fear. Aside from the fact that we dislike things that are different from us or different from the society that we understand, different from our cultural experience, even if it's right there, once again, right under the water level, and always has been, and always will be. We can cover it over and hope that it doesn't rear its head, but it's there. It's
well,
there.
Can we teach ourselves out of this? I
of
don't
course.
Know, debauchery of life?
Of course we can.
I mean,
and as you said, it's right there in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Treat people with dignity, treat people with respect, and you build a civil society. Make sure that you provide so that people do not feel threatened but feel welcome, and you build a civil society, and you prosper when you decide that it is only for me and not for you. You see the future of negativity, destruction, violence, and hatred.
Wow.
And why doesn't religion guide us toward that end? Or are they also in fear that their numbers will be diminished?
You see
so
that
this is a human trait of fear of the other, whoever the other is.
Yep.
Wow.
Fear is an animal instinct.
I would never taught that.
Fear is an animal instinct that goes back to the most prehistoric, earliest of beings, and it's all based on this desire to survive. And survival is probably the most fundamental feeling that we have. But for us to be humans, for us to be successful humans living in complex societies, we have forced ourselves to move beyond that. And we've done that with law, and we've done that with government. We've done that with education, and we've done that with all of those things which bridle against our natural instinct. But if we rely solely on our natural instinct, which is to hate and to distrust and to be uncomfortable, then we resort back to the animal kingdom, and then our societies will crumble because we can't survive as human beings in a complex world and live like the chimps do, or the lions, or the hyenas. They don't have, they as complex as their structures may be, they're far less structured, far less reliant on the ability to live in complex societies that build cities, that build houses, that build dams, that have electricity, that do have art museums. You know, that takes a certain amount of development, forethought, and the other animals do not have that. And it's whether it's God-given or a curse, I'm not sure, but that's where we are. And there are things that we know we have to do. And if they're difficult, we make them the enemy. And then we attack them.
That's true.
Because change is difficult. But change is the only thing we can count on.
So how is it that we move forward and yet at the same time we're in such fear? Or is it just
because
that a few of us move forward and then they guide us somehow?
That is exactly right. The the brave, the Martin Luther King Juniors of the world push. They push gently, they push hard, and eventually we catch up. Lincoln always said, you know, as president, he had to very often lead from behind because the people were not ready to go there. But he always sought out those who were leading out front. And he told them, you've got to do this. You've got to do this so that I can pull people with me to catch up. But if I do it first, I will set issue back rather than bring it forward. So, yes, he could have done the Emancipation Proclamation on the first day of the war, but he would have lost Kentucky. He would have lost Maryland. He would have lost other states that were the border states, and then the war would have turned out differently. So
right.
That is the brilliance of leadership, is knowing how and when to move an issue forward. But you always need, Johnson and Kennedy knew that they needed Martin Luther King in some ways more than he needed them, because he had to move the civil rights movement forward for them to get laws passed, for them to get the white public to say, this is the right thing to do, and support the legislation that was passed in the Johnson years. And now we have the pushback, you know? Now we have the people who are saying, we went too far. Civil rights is not in the Constitution. All of that kind of malarkey that leads us to believe that we're unconstitutional by saying people are equal. There it is in the Declaration of Independence. There it is in the subtext of the U.S. Constitution. There it is in the reason that people still hold the Statue of Liberty to a higher standard because of what it signifies for this country. So we know that that's there. We can try to deny it in order to maintain our own personal power, or the power of our small group of people that makes up part of the citizenry. But that's all that we're doing. We're trying to save ourselves at the expense of the world around us. And that means we're not really saving ourselves at all. We're saving what we pretend is us. But it's not us.
And so why is it that some societies move forward faster than others? Is that because the people in power can maintain that power longer? Such as we see what's going on in Iran now, but that seems to be faltering. We don't know what the outcome will be, because it's a battle between the young generation and the old, the entrenched generation. So we can never tell, and we never know where the new evolution will take us, do we?
We do know that when we evolve to a more just world. Eventually, we get to a more just world. We get to a world where there's greater equality between people. We get to a world that offers greater services for more people. You know, when airlines started Pan Am, only the elite could fly.
Right.
Now, pretty much anybody who wants to travel can fly. In the early days of trains, the elite took trains. Everybody else still used wagons and horses. So there was medicine for the rich, and then there was death for the poor. Now, in many places around the world, there's healthcare for everybody. Education is now a public trust, public schools, public libraries. So the things that were only for elite are now open to far greater numbers of people. That's evolution. That's the direction we are going in, whether we like it or not. The idea that women can vote, the idea that other minorities can vote and get elected and play a role in government. That's where we are going, whether we like it or not. There will be setbacks. There are setbacks. We are witnessing them now here in the United States. But that's what they are. They're setbacks. They are not the direction that we are going in. Book banning will never succeed in the long term. Banning words, banning things in education, banning things in society will never work in the long term. Why? Because they try to hold us down. They try to push us back. It's not possible as the world steamrolls forward and technology and science and culture and creativity are ultimately a force that is far greater than reactionary behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
So we know where we're going. It's just unfortunate that it's a very painful road to follow. But it's the only choice that
yeah.
we have.
Mm-hmm.
We will have to deal with those things. We will confront them. And we will confront the backlash that is consistent. Those in office today who would like to go back to the 1940s or 1930s or 1800s,
yeah.
they're there. They're pushing. They're scaring mm-hmm. the public into believing that if we don't return to those simpler times when few people had any interest in being in government or were mm-hmm. welcome to participate are the ways of survival. When you and you ruled the roost, we've got to go back to that because these other people will steal your jobs. They're criminals. Mm. They're bad people. We've got to get rid of them. That won't work. It will work potentially in the short run. But as we saw in Kansas, where women said, no way are you going to take our rights away as women to secure abortions or be the owners of our own body. And Kansas is mm-hmm. considered one of the most conservative states in the union. And they said no.
Mm-hmm. Well,
that means there's an awful lot of people in the United States that do not want to go backwards, even mm-hmm. if elected officials would like to push us there. And that's a good thing to know because therefore we know that lurking under that body of water are people who understand the difference between right and wrong, the difference between us moving forward or going backwards. And my guess is that we will have a rough patch. We may have a violent patch. But ultimately, we will move ahead. And the only thing that will stop us is the catastrophes that face the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Because fear alone will hold us up, will delay us, but will not be able to stop progress.
Wow. Well, that's very positive to think about it, but it's a tumultuous move that is required. And it seems like it's a constant struggle. Do we realize that it's a constant struggle or some do and others don't? So those are the leaders that we have that could show us a different way.
No,
not
I think everyone's as a leader. I think that in this regard, it's up to everybody. It's up to individuals, how you treat your
uh-huh.
neighbor, how you treat your family, how you treat your coworkers. I think that's where it comes from. You know,
okay.
leaders will, and I use the term loosely, leaders, elected officials, people in power will ultimately reflect how the public treats itself.
Mm-hmm.
If the public is scared of the neighbor, if the public does not trust their own children to make the right
mm-hmm.
decisions, then the higher-ups, the powerful, will reflect that. But by and large, it is us. It is us as we move forward, as
uh-huh.
we not follow elected officials or powerful people, but the people who are pushing us to be better versions of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Martin Luther Kings, the Nelson
yeah.
Mandelas. When we follow
mm-hmm.
or participate or engage with those kinds of people, the Gloria Steinems,
mm-hmm.
that move us towards a greater humanity, a more welcoming world, then we're moving in the right direction. There will always be enough jobs. There will always be enough food. There will always be all those things if we treat each other right. We will find a way to make
mm-hmm.
it work. But when those who believe they are better than us sequester food, keep us out of housing, keep us away mm-hmm. from good health care, there will always be trouble.
Uh-huh.
Because if we're sharing the pain, it's easier to endure than when we're enduring it alone. So you mm-hmm. want to take my rights away, then my first goal is going to be trying to take your rights away.
Right.
And
right.
that's a war. And that's what we see right now going on in various parts of the world. That's what we see in Iran, a war between
yeah.
young women and the Ayatollahs that is being enjoined by young people and their parents.
Mm-hmm.
Those parents want a better world for their children.
Yeah.
And we saw it in Egypt when young people
yeah.
took to the streets. They were not
mm-hmm.
successful, ultimately, and they live in a dictatorship today. But
yeah.
that means it is there. That feeling, that quest, that thirst for democracy, for self-rule,
mm-hmm.
for moving into the future is there. And at some point, it will rear its beautiful head once again. And at some point, somewhere, somehow, they will find their version of democracy, their version of freedom, and their version of self-rule. So everything pushing in the same direction is just how many obstacles are in the way of getting there.
Well the propensity is to advance somehow. Our circumstance, and how is it that you got such powerful people who took control in Iran? Why do they falter? Is it because they don't have they no longer have the awareness of their susceptibility and lack of prowess when they were hungry for power at one time? And now they're losing it, can they take a corrective action to hold on to it?
Well, you
or
have to remember how they
now
came.
Now become
you
too dumb.
You have to remember how they came to power. They came to power because a tyrant was ruling
mm-hmm.
the country.
Correct.
Who was not paying attention to the need. Right. Was not paying attention to the needs of the people.
Mm.
And Ayatollah Khomeini, who was living in Paris, spoke
yes.
to the needs of the people.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he came back, the people were ecstatic, and the Shah fled.
Yes.
But over time, the Ayatollahs have been unable to become part of the world. They have
mm-hmm.
been unable to show how their version of Islam could join the 21st century, to rub and chafe what everybody else saw going on in the rest of the world. Access to information, access to equality,
mm-hmm.
access to participatory government, access to the finer things in life that other people around the world were now enjoying. And so now they find themselves where they're holding on once again to the status quo, but their country has already moved on. And they
mm-hmm.
will do whatever it takes to hold on to power, but ultimately they will have to lose. But they will fight tooth and nail to win because power is so powerful.
Toxicated.
The quest for
yeah.
power is so powerful. And we saw it in the Soviet Union. It crumbled.
Mm-hmm.
And those places that could try and make it work, like the Baltic states and some of the independent Central European countries,
mm-hmm.
are trying to make it work. And there were places that dictators evolved, like in Russia, like in Kazakhstan and some of the other places, now in Hungary, where they scared people into saying, we've moved too fast, too quickly, and that's not for us. We need this kind of government. And the people,
mm-hmm.
because of economic downturns, because of other things that they were unsure of that made them uneasy, kowtowed to these power-hungry rulers and now are finding themselves once again in a position that they find uncomfortable. Eventually, all these places will continue the movement forward because there is no other chance and no other choice if we are to live in the modern world. It's just how we get there. And every country and every group of people and every religion and every subsect and every minority group will do it a little bit differently. But ultimately, there will be limited choices in terms of how reactionary you can be, simply because the unbridled anger at being repressed overcomes the fear of what powerful people can and will do to you.
Mm-hmm. So I guess, is that why we have so few Martin Luther Kings and John F. Kennedy and or Lyndon Baines Johnson? You know, is that why there's so few of them? How do they overcome their fear?
They overcome their fear because they feel that they feel that they have no choice. Martin Luther King felt he had no choice,
right,
that he was put on this earth to do that work.
Mm-hmm. So it's a tremendous sacrifice for someone like
it
him.
Is.
Or anybody
it is a
else.
Big, yes. You give up
Where
your life.
Where do they find
you
the strength? Yeah.
They find the strength by believing that that is why they're here. They
okay.
find the strength because they understand that someone has to do the work and they feel chosen.
Uh-huh. Unbelievable. And you have to feel chosen? It's like an internal feeling?
It's sort of like why people pick the priesthood or a nunnery or a rabbi. They feel
uh-huh.
a calling. It's a calling.
A calling.
Why does someone decide to be a teacher?
Yeah, that's right.
Think
it's a
of,
calling.
Think of what it takes, the compromises and the sacrifices to be a teacher in today's world,
mm-hmm.
in a public school. That's a calling.
Yeah.
You know, so,
and so there's an sense
it's not
a
that everybody.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, it's not that everybody
senses.
Can do it.
Uh-huh. So is that the thing that actually confines us to where we may be, because we don't recognize what our task should be in life? And how do we learn that? How do we know that we should be a teacher? How do we know that we should be a leader of a discipline? How do we know to explore as a scientist? Or is that just that's part of who we are and we just don't even
it
realize
is definitely, it?
It
is definitely part of who we are.
So it's something that we can nurture as well?
Absolutely. And if
uh-huh.
you have the right mentor or the right experience at, you know, at a formative age, that can be
yeah.
the light that goes on behind those eyes of yours that makes you say, ah, I now know who I am.
Uh-huh.
And you've heard it before when certain actors or actresses have been interviewed and they say, there was never a plan B for me. I never thought I could do anything else. I can't do anything else. This
mm-hmm.
is all that I can be.
Right.
It's no different. It's no different. So no matter what your calling is, And not everybody feels that they have a calling. And those people
mm-hmm.
can live happy lives, but they're part of the great middle. And if you want
okay.
to escape being in the middle, if you find that you are in some way, somehow, somewhere special, you continually search for where you can make the most difference. And when you find
mm-hmm.
it, and it doesn't mean being Martin Luther King Jr. It doesn't
mm-hmm.
mean being, the head of Germany when you're going to unite Germany. Those mm-hmm. are extraordinarily exceptional people, the people
yeah.
who are able to truly bring people together.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to put yourself out there. You have to be willing to take risks. And that is difficult. That is unbelievably difficult. But when you do it,
mm-hmm.
when you succeed at doing that, you have changed the world one person
wow.
at a time.
Mm. That's absolutely astounding, you know, to hear you give that expression. Well, I've certainly learned a great deal today, which I guess has escaped me. But then we all need mentors like you, don't we?
Well,
we
all need mentors.
Of course.
And most people never find it. Most people never find it. Most people are never excited by a teacher or a religious figure or a parent.
Uh-huh.
And they go through life wondering, is that all there is? And that's why that song was so popular. Is that all there is?
Mm-hmm. Right. So not everybody gets it from their mothers and fathers. They may get it from a religious person, or they may get it by trying to emulate a ruler of a country or that sort of thing.
Right.
Or maybe
lots
through reading a particular book.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So we don't really know. There's no formula here. But there are many formulas.
The formula is being open to change. The formula is being open, being willing to accept.
Okay.
Saying yes. You know, why don't mm-hmm. you try that? Say yes. Force yourself to overcome your fears. Be willing to jump into the water. Be willing to...
Is that what we are? We're just in fear. We're in fear
most of the time,
the unknown?
The unknown is the predominant fear.
Are we fear of knowledge?
I don't know if we're afraid of... It's unknown. Knowledge is
uh-huh.
the other side of unknown.
Correct.
You know, the simplest way to say it is the fear of the unknown, the fear
uh-huh.
of the different. You know, I'm afraid
okay.
to taste that food. Why are you afraid to taste food?
Yeah.
Because I don't know what it will taste like. I don't know if I like it or not. Well,
uh-huh.
how will you know if you never taste it?
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So
taste the watermelon.
This
taste
is all
the
basic.
Berry.
Uh-huh.
It is.
It's
That's
all
the whole
basic,
point.
But, uh-huh.
That's
so
the whole point.
It's not impossible to achieve. It's just that we're in fear of such... I had no idea we were in such fear.
Most of people's everyday lives is centered around what they're afraid of.
Uh-huh.
Why do you think that people like routine? Because it takes away the fear of what's going to come next.
Uh-huh. Wow.
I get up every morning, I do this, I do this, I go to work, I go there, I go home, I go to sleep. Why?
Okay.
It's boring as hell, but it's not scary because I do it every day. And what happens?
Mm-hmm.
What happens? When something disrupts that, people panic. People get nervous.
Oh.
People get upset.
Mm-hmm.
People get stressed because
mm-hmm.
they can't easily accept change. So if there's a car accident on the way to work, people get there's road flooding. People get stressed. Stress
mm-hmm.
is often a symptom of fear because you don't know how to react. You don't know what to do. You don't know how it's going to affect you. So instead of rolling with that punch, you tighten up. You become fearful. You become angry.
Mm.
Fear is a very powerful tool. and dictators
and
use it brilliantly.
Can we nurture, I guess, an environment for us that is not fearful? How do we
Absolutely. Dignity. Treat people with dignity. Treat people with respect. Make people feel welcome. Make people understand. Yep,
and
that's how we get there.
And they will do that for us. Is that is
the
that
majority
what, is that
of
what
people
we're in
will,
fear of that they won't do that for us when we want to do it for them?
I don't know if that's it, because
okay.
that's not important. If they
no,
don't do
it
back, then they
be.
Don't do it back. But the majority
yeah.
of people will respond in kind.
Uh-huh.
It's like in the mornings when I go out for a run and I say
mm-hmm.
hello to the homeless people at 4
yeah.
or 5 o'clock in the morning, they
right.
are so glad that someone sees them.
Correct.
They say good morning back. Oh, so nice to see you. They sleep on a bench.
Yeah.
They sleep on the street,
yeah.
on the cement,
mm-hmm.
and they are
mm-hmm.
so glad that someone has taken the time to acknowledge their existence, that they are thrilled
yeah.
to respond.
Yeah.
If
but
those
the,
people
the joy,
who
the
have
joy
such,
of doing that for someone is huge.
Yes.
And we seem to be reluctant, so many of us. Reluctant to do that. You know, to be honest with you, I think when I was much younger, I never realized that, or maybe I didn't see the pain of someone who was homeless. But
it's also
I remember,
something that scares you.
I remember full well somebody told me, and then I realized they were right. And why should I not respect somebody? I mean,
and for most
what
people,
have they done
it's
to
fear.
Be to be disrespected? It's my fear of having that circumstance for myself. Is that what it was?
That's a lot of it, you know.
Uh-huh.
A lot of it.
Wow.
Why are those people on the street? Why, you know, for a long time, poverty was considered an evil thing. You're poor because
yeah.
you were a bad person.
Yes. I remember hearing things like that, yep.
God rewards people by making them rich or comfortable, and only the bad people are poor.
Mm-hmm.
Bad people are left-handed. Bad people are anything that is different from what we accept as mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
And so we become fearful. You know, if someone
wow.
wants to write with their left hand, you hit them with a ruler. Get that knocked
mm-hmm.
out of them.
Right.
And then we evolved
wow.
and realized it's not a terrible thing to be left-handed.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a terrible thing to do this. It's not a terrible thing to do that. All of these changes take time for the masses because there are people in power who instill those things in us in order to maintain their power.
Mm-hmm. Is that part of religion as well?
Absolutely.
Uh-huh. Because I never could understand why there would be a need, for example, when I look at the church, there might be an archbishop here and an archbishop there, but they don't conform to the same rules and regulations, and there are schisms all the time.
Yes,
is that
there are.
Also fear of the lack of control in society?
Well, it's like everything else. There are some that are moving forward, and there are others
yes.
that want things to stay the same.
Uh-huh.
And if you are in the school of thought of someone who wants everything to stay the same or go back to a greater time
mm-hmm.
that never really existed, then you get
right.
into that schism. You know, there are,
wow.
there are still people who think that the Catholic Mass should be in Latin.
Yes, I
because
know.
You should not have a direct chain to God. It must go through
uh-huh.
a Catholic priest. Well,
okay.
now most people don't believe that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Wow.
You know, it was true with Jews. Religious Jews believed you could pray in Hebrew, but you spoke Yiddish.
Yes, that's right.
Hebrew was reserved for prayer, and now Hebrew is a living language. Right.
Uh-huh.
So there was always a way to keep people from being able to communicate with God, which put power in the hands of religious leaders and kept it out of the hands of the public.
So how do we teach this, or are we teaching it? Are we teaching
people
not to fear?
No, because we gain power. Knowledge is power.
That's because
absence
of the power.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Teach about leaders. We teach biography. We don't teach history.
Uh-huh.
Because the less you know, and religion is the prime example, the less you are able to communicate directly with God, the more you are unable to correspond with the people that hold power, the more intermediaries there are, the more fearful you are that you will be left out, the more you bend and bow and scrape in order to stay in the good graces of those who oversee your world.
Wow.
And the way out of that is treating everybody with dignity, believing that everybody is equal.
Mm-hmm.
If you believe that the homeless person as a person is equal to you, if you believe that the child who lives next door as a person is equal to you with the same rights under the law and the same rights in society, whether they're gay or straight, whether they're black or white, whether they're female or male or something in between, then you start to live in the world that we all say we want but are all afraid to make happen.
Wow. Well, it's a lesson for sure. And I can't believe it. I was just looking at the iPad, and I realized that we are way over the time slot. So you've got to forgive me. It's just I was entranced by what you had to say, and I lost all track of time. So forgive me. I hope I haven't intruded into whatever your plans were for the day.
I will make the exception because the conversation is one that we all need to have. And thank you for allowing that opportunity on your program.
Well, thank you. Well,
so stay
all the best. You too.
Thank you.
Thank you so
Bye-bye.
Much. Bye. My goodness, it doesn't get better than speaking to a brilliant, compassionate man who evidently is aware of the frailties of life and seems to be able to eclipse so many of them just because of his knowledge. I've certainly learned a tremendous amount just by listening to him, talking to him. Oh, what an honor for me, much simpler human being than evidently he is. Wow, absolutely, I'm blown away. Well, anyway, I'm going to, normally we would go on till 12 o'clock, but to be honest with you, I've got things that I need to do and didn't expect that. I really didn't expect that I would find that I really need to do them now more than ever before. So forgive me. And then tomorrow will be another day. Hopefully you'll join us then. It'll be a pleasure. And one thing, though, I do remember, I think it was John Bailey, who was not able to join us today. He sent over an email telling us about the latest results with regard to the COVID, so I don't have the time today to finish that. So what I'll do is I'll post it on the website, or you might want to go simply to WPCNR, which stands for White Plains Citizenet Reporter, WPCNR.com. And I'm sure it's on John's website, the White Plains Citizenet Reporter, John Bailey. He's the publisher and the editor, and I'm sure that he's posted already. And I'll see if I can replicate it later on for you today. So all the best. Thank you very, very much. It's been an honor and a pleasure. Be well. And may we all have learned how to be less fearful in life, to be like a major lesson, say the least. All right, so there we go. We'll say goodbye, and we'll speak to you tomorrow. Goodbye.